Chris joined the Marine Corps in 2002 because he had been curious about the military since he was a little boy and had dreams of living a Spartan lifestyle. Chris served in the Marine Corps infantry in various roles, including a fire team leader, platoon commander, and company commander. He loved that he chose to live a lifestyle others wouldn't and couldn't live. He also loved the crazy and fun personalities Marines have and misses that most. In 2018, and after 16 years, Chris left the Marines as a major. Hello everyone, and welcome to Ghost Turd Stories. I'm your host, Troy Gent. Ghost Turd Stories' mission is using humorous and challenging stories from veterans and first responders to reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. Ghost Turd Stories' vision is to use humorous and challenging stories to prevent suicide within our ranks and reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. We hope to attract veterans and first responders, as well as those interested in knowing more about what it's like to be in our shoes while we wear or wore those shoes. At Ghost Turd Stories, we tell and write the stories of veterans and first responders for their families and friends. We love storytelling and believe there is nothing more inspiring and nothing that gets people to take action like a great story. Families and friends want to know the sacrifices we made, the services we rendered, and the people we lifted, so they can be inspired and learn about the legacy we left. Our podcast is the face of our company, but we want every family who cares to know about the experiences their veteran and or first responder went through for them. We interview veterans and first responders, collect pictures, write their stories, and compile them in a book for their families and friends to enjoy. Oftentimes, it's difficult for us to talk to our loved ones about what we did, saw, and heard while serving. At Ghost Turd Stories, we bridge the gap. For pricing, visit linktr.ee/ghostturdstories and click on the second tab directly under the podcast link called Let Us Write Your Story. That's linktr.ee/ghostturdstories. Chris, thanks for being my guest. And go ahead, just briefly tell the audience why you joined the Marine Corps and when.
I joined the Marine Corps. It's something I'd always wanted to do, even from when I was a little kid. And then I did ROTC my freshman year at Auburn, but then I decided I didn't really want to do it anymore. My sophomore year is when 9/11 happened. So that following summer, I was not doing too well in school. And the school said, hey, we think you may need to take a semester off. So instead of going home, I enlisted in the reserves. So I went to boot camp. So part of it was I didn't want to go home. And then part of it was post 9/11. So I went to boot camp in 2002 and stayed in until 2018.
You mentioned that you were at boot camp 5 weeks longer than most people because of a wisdom tooth incident.
Pulled my wisdom teeth and you get senior drill instructor's bed rest for a solid day, you know, so you go back to the squad bay. Well, I kept noticing I was swallowing a lot of blood, but like you also, you know, you don't want to be the guy to complain. You just sit there and suck it up. And I didn't know any better. So I laid there swallowing my own blood for pretty much the majority of the day. I got up for dinner to go get my hot plate. All of a sudden, I didn't feel well. So I sprinted to the bathroom to vomit. And when I did, I just vomited up blood that I've been swallowing all day. Well, because I had lost so much blood, then I passed out and I cracked my head open. And so I woke up and realized that I had made a big mess. There's blood all over me, all over the floor, all over the walls, and the toilet. It was on the ceiling. I'm trying to get toilet paper to clean it up. the drill instructor comes in there and freaks out.
Yeah, I mean, there is blood everywhere.
And I see him and he's like, "What'd you do to yourself, boy?" And I was like, "This recruit, sorry, sir. This recruit, sorry. This recruit will clean it up." And he's like, "Lay down." And he, like, you know, they took me off the island. I took me to the hospital because they had to put like 9 stitches in my head because I'd lost so much blood. I was anemic for a month. So I had to go to the medical rehabilitation, you know, the broke dick platoon. And that's a smattering of, like, you know, you got about 80 kids in there. And 78 of them just want to go home. They don't want to finish training.
Is that run by a drill instructor?
Yeah, it's run by drill instructors, and it was just a depressing place. Like, it's essentially like, you know, they'd go in formation to the chow hall, and then you'd see them, like, go in formation. Of course, like, the big outing of the day was going to the medical clinic. They all had appointments. So you just see this, like, you know, smattering of kids wandering around.
Like a bunch of rejects.
Oh, yeah. It's a bunch of rejects. And they, you know, like I said, most of them don't want to be there. And I remember I made up this little song, like it was a parody to the Marine Corps hymn. And it was called the Base Medical Clinic, the BMC. But the platoon, you know, the Broke Dicks was the Medical Rehabilitation Platoon, the MRP. And so I would sit there. I came up with a parody to the Marine Corps hymn. And it's like, if 1st and 2nd Battalion ever look to the BMC, they'll see the halls are guarded by the recruits of MRP. That's pretty much what MRP was. So finally, I got to go rejoin a training. And the only thing I really had to do was like 3 or 4 more weeks of boot camp.
You went to 3-7. That was your first assignment. You were platoon commander in 3-7, or were you the assistant officer, you said?
Yeah, I went to 3-7 in 2008, did a deployment as a platoon commander, came back, I became the weapons platoon commander in one of the other companies. When we started in Afghanistan, I was the assistant officer. So there was about a month into the deployment, there was a lieutenant, a platoon commander that was relieved of command. So I became platoon commander again as a first lieutenant. When we came back from Afghanistan, I was the H&S company commander as a first lieutenant. I had Haters and Skaters, you know, holy shit company. So
the holy shit company. I've never heard that term before.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mainly because sometimes, like, somebody would say they couldn't come to a training event because of their reasoning. You'd just be like, "Holy shit, is that even real?" You know, because you got all the cooks, bakers, and candlestick makers in that group. It's an eclectic bunch. When you would do room inspections, some of the stuff you'd find in those rooms were a lot different than, like, the infantry kid rooms.
Like, what were some of the differences?
You know, in the infantry rooms, like, you would see, like, video game sets and, like, you'd always find their stash of of adult materials. But then you would go in, like, the, you know, the kids who were in supply and comm, their video game setup was like a full on thing, right? There's like headsets and like special screens and all this other crap.
They were more nerds than the infantry guys.
Yeah. I was in one. I found this. It had a gigantic blow up purple alien. I was like, "What the hell is this?" You know, like, random. So yeah, that was my time at 3-7. I got to have an experience. I was in every company, with the exception of weapons company.
What would you say your favorite rank was, and why?
I would say first lieutenant, junior captain was the best time. Because first lieutenant, you really kind of start to hit your stride. And then when I got to go be a platoon commander again, it was great because I had been at the battalion level for over a year. So operating at a platoon level was, I don't want to say simple, but it was much easier the second time around. And then being a junior captain, when I was an instructor at the basic school, that was awesome too, because you work with some of the best officers in the Marine Corps, and that was really fun to be a part of.
So at the basic school, were you I forgot what they called them,
the staff lieutenant commander, an SBC?
Yeah, Were you SBC?
Yes. I did it three times. I did three companies.
Oh, you were there about a year and a half?
I was at TBS for 3.5 years.
3.5?
Yeah. The first year you do what's, you're just an instructor. You're teaching classes. After about a year or so, that's when I got my first company. And those are 6 months long. So that's 6 months, a little bit of a break, but not much of one, like a couple weeks. And then I went into my second company. And then there was a gap between me and my third company. And that was the warrant officers, which is about 4.5 months long. With those, you're looking at a year and a half time. Yeah, total time, I was there about 3.5 years. So
I'm going to backtrack just a little bit here. I forgot to ask you about OCS. Is there anything?
Yeah, so there was.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a kid who he had gotten so stressed, he essentially had developed a lazy eye. And so, you know, they sit there and they're like, eyeballs, and you're supposed to say snap, and everybody's supposed to look at the person who said the drill instructor. Oh, this kid didn't look. And I won't say the kid's real name. So I'm just going to say Smith. God damn it, Smith. What does it mean when I say eyeballs? He's like, these cannons, you're supposed to look at you. He's like, I would accept one fucking eyeball from you. You can't even give me that. That's what?
Oh, man.
And this same kid, we were doing where they do wall locker inspections. And for some reason, even though like none of us really had hair, this kid had a comb. It was a comb from Chuck E. Cheese. So it had a fucking mouse on it. And so we're sitting there. Of course, the drill instructor's like not very tall. And he's just like, what the fuck is this? Like, and he's like, it's a comb. And he's like, Chuck E. Cheese. Giant fucking rat. And then just breaks it. Just like, of course. I start laughing because in the alphabet, this kid has a name that's close to my name. So, of course, like I get in trouble for laughing.
That was my experience was OCS. It was just like that. It was so funny to me.
I've been using Isagenix since 2017. These products have made a world of difference in my quality of life, health, energy, muscle definition, strength, and endurance. My bread and butter products have been the Daily Essentials Multivitamins with Isagenesis, which is a telomere support supplement, the Isoline Meal Replacement Shake, the Tri-Release Protein Shake, the Collagen, the Green Drink, and the Cleanse for Life support system. However, Isagenix has many products and can cater to your unique lifestyle and goals. Click the link in the show notes or visit nmp.isagenix.com. Besides just using the products, there is an option to partner with me and the company to build your own business with no capital upfront. You can do as little as pay for your products and as much as making a full-time income. I love these products and will use them the rest of my life. For more information, you can email me at ghostturdstories@gmail.com.
I really started to notice a shift around 2012, 2013. It was, you know, we were coming into the second 4 years of the Obama administration. You started to see a lot more, well, we've got to get, you know, more diversity in the ranks. We've got to get women into these jobs and women into that job and more diversity in this MOS and yada, yada, yada. It's not that I'm saying that shouldn't be done, but the approach, I think, is flawed. And to force anything like that, I think you really do more harm than good. We started to have to talk about some things that, you know, I'm not going to mention them, but like, I don't really want to talk about. And then two, what does it have to do with like defending our country? I think people forget that the whole point of the Department of Defense is to be the best at killing our enemies, at killing people who are trying to hurt our country. It's not some social experiment for some politician to push his or her agenda. When I first started, you know, a kid would get a DUI. It was like, all right, well, I'll deal with it on Monday, you know? And by the time I got out, it was like, oh, hey, so-and-so got caught underage drinking. Well, let's like launch like a command investigation. Who bought him the alcohol? How much did he drink? You know, what type of alcohol was it? What brand was it? You know, did we get the pair of shoes that he had on while he was drinking the alcohol? Yeah, I mean, it just turned into complete. And then we would sit there and fry a kid for some stuff that you know that the battalion commander did when he was in college. And the thing is that the kid who comes in to be a machine gunner, he's probably got a screw loose or two, right? And honestly, you need that, right? You need that. You don't want that little weak ass that sits there and is like, oh, I sat at home and played World of Warcraft all weekend. Yeah, like, I think you started to see a change in who they were recruiting. I mean, the amount of kids that we started to get who had absolutely no athletic ability whatsoever, and then like had never been into a fist fight growing up. I mean, it's pathetic. And so you sit there and wonder why everybody gets their feelings hurt and walk around like someone pissed in their Cheerios. And then I'll never forget too, like kids would come to the battalion. We would have their fucking parents there. And then we would have to give the parents, like it's summer camp. And then their parents are calling me being like, hey, so-and-so called me and said that people are being mean to him. And I'm like, my little boy, your little boy is 19 years old and signed up. Like, this is not what I came in for. I came in to run around with men and like fucking shoot things and let's go and party on the weekends and live kind of a Spartan lifestyle and go here and go there and do whatever. And now I'm sitting here turning into a fucking legal officer and I got to sit there and worry about some shit that doesn't matter. And, you know, oh, let's go. Oh, and while you're at it, go have a talk on, you know, how we have to be inclusive of transgenders. Like, fuck off. I'm not here to push your bullshit.
People ask me why I didn't stay in, and I guess I could see the writing on the wall, and I saw myself turning into what you just described, and I didn't know what the extent would be as far as what you're explaining with the wokeness and stuff, but I just knew I'm not going to be happy if I stay. And so that being said, you did 16 years, 4 years to retirement. Was that the main reason you got out? Like, I can't handle another 4 years of this, or what happened?
You know, like it just got so bad. I'll never forget. We were at training in Yuma, and you know, I had been a 3-7 guy, so I was used to the desert. I knew what it takes to get your guys acclimatized. We were training, and I wanted to do a company hike 3 miles, right, in the middle of the day. It was going to be a light load. It wasn't going to be main rucks. It was going to be like flak jacket, Kevlar, and like a very light day pack, right? It was essentially going to be like if you had to go into a fight or run a range, this is the outfit that you're going to be in. I wasn't going to weigh them down, and, you know, we weren't going to be carrying, you know, 50 cals and, you know, 81 millimeter. It was just, we were a rifle company.
What point of your career was this?
This was when I was a company commander, when I was in 3-6. So I was told no, you know, and our sergeant major had been a 7th Marines guy. So as me and the battalion commander sitting there disagreeing in the COC, I looked at Sergeant Major. It's like, Sergeant Major, I mean, you got to back me up on that. Like, you're a 7th Marines guy, you know. And he's like, oh, sir, I just don't think it's safe. And I finally just slammed my dip bottle down. I was like, well, I tell you what, let's just admit that we're a bunch of pussies, call ourselves the U.S. Army, and we'll fucking change our camis, you know? And so the battalion commander's like, Captain Parks, get outside, you know? And it was shit like that. And so a few days later, me and him were at breakfast. And he was telling me, you know, and it was me and one of the other company commanders. And he said, well, you know, you will both probably be battalion commanders someday. I see it. What do you want to do next?
This was the sergeant major talking to you?
No, this was the battalion commander talking to us one morning at breakfast. It was like me and one of the other company commanders. And so I said, well, I'm dropping papers. I'm getting out. And he was like, what? I said, this isn't what I signed up for. I was like, this is pathetic. Marines will die because we're going soft. And I learned some lessons in Afghanistan about preparation for fighting and the things that matter and that keep people alive. If you don't want to hear it, there's nothing I can do for you, you know, and it's time for me to go. Once we came back from Yuma, the battalion got to go to Fleet Week, New York, which was cool. It was really amazing time. And so as we go to Fleet Week, we're coming back and we're in the officer's mess area. The battalion commander's like, so what'd you think? I was like, one of the coolest things I ever got to do in my life. Definitely one of the coolest things I've done in the Marine Corps. Yeah, amazing week. And he's like, oh, he's like, so I guess you're going to stay in now. It's like, absolutely not. No, I'm not. Like, and he's like, why not? You know, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm 36 years old. My wife came up from DC. I wanted to stay out off the ship with her, which is a block and a half. The hotel that she's at is a block and a half from the ship. And I wasn't allowed to. I can fucking come to New York with her anytime I want. So it was a combination of all of that. It was just time for me to go. And everybody says, oh, it's only 4 more years. It's only 4 more years. Every day I drove to work, I was dead inside. I was dreading the whole drive home or drive in and was just miserable every day. And so when people say 4 more years, yeah, 4 more years in the grand scheme of life is nothing. But you're really talking about 4 times 365. You only have so many days on this earth. Why would you sit there and waste 4 times 365 being miserable just for a fucking retirement check? The other part of that is when you're an officer, you exist to serve the Marines. And I knew that the Marines were not going to get my best and they deserve the best. And so sometimes you've got to take a step back and realize that, like, it's not about my paycheck or my retirement and what rank I can get.
You've got a pretty incredible story about your interpreter in Afghanistan. And I don't know if you'd care to share that experience and how he got out.
Yeah. You know, I had always told him and I'd written him letters and stuff. And we had tried several times to get him out. My wife worked in DC and worked for congressmen. And so we knew some people. This was long before the fall of Afghanistan. And we tried to get him out, but he had a negative thing on his record. It didn't really make sense, but the person we had talked to said, well, look, you're going to have to do this to get this kind of taken away. So we were kind of working through it, but it was just taking time. So fast forward to, we see the writing on the wall and he's sending me messages like, you know, what are we going to do? So I put a message out on like social media and Nicole, who you know, replied. And really through her contacts and some of mine and then some we made together, we built a network and between Nicole and me, you know, it's one of those things of like, well, hey, I know this person, you know, and then this person knows that person. We bring them into the circle and we're working to get visas. We're working to get this. We're working to get that. And I had some guys that I had been in 3-7 with that we had been in Afghanistan with. And then I knew some people, some Marines who were on the ground who were very high up in the Marine battalion that was there. And I knew some State Department private security guys. And so through working those contacts along with what Nicole had going on, we were able to kind of start to put a plan together. And so I'll never forget, you know, we thought we had him several times, but it didn't come. And like, get to this point, well, he's got to pull back. He has a wife and two kids. It's hot, it's dangerous, and he's dodging Taliban, right? And so finally it gets to a point where I get a call and it's like, hey, if you want him out, he's got to be at this point within 30 minutes. So I've been calling Syed. I'm like, here's the pen drop. You've got to get there. They'll bring you. I get another phone call like 20 minutes later. It's Syed. And he's like, hey, Lieutenant Parks, because that's how he knew me. And he hands the phone. And so the guy was like, is this Major Parks? I was like, yes. And he's like, well, I've got Syed and his family. I said, are you inside friendly lines? And he's like, yeah. And he said, what am I supposed to do with it? So then I contacted one of the guys that I knew on the ground, private State Department security. They had a link up. He got Syed in with the Marines. So I get a phone call from this fucking lieutenant on the ground at the airfield. And the lieutenant's like, is this Major Parks? And I was like, yes. He's like, well, this is Lieutenant so-and-so. I'm so-and-so, you know, what do you need? And I was like, I need Syed, his wife, and his kids on the next plane. And like, legitimately, Syed was out within 12 hours.
Explain why he was so important to you that you tried that hard to get him out of Afghanistan.
When I went to go be a rifle platoon commander, this is when I met Syed. My company from 3-7 got attached to 3-6 down in Marsha. A lot of our interpreters quit because it was dangerous. So Syed says to me, wherever you go, I will go with you and your Marines. He's like, it doesn't matter where it is or how dangerous it is. He's like, I will be there with you. And I took it as like, you know, wow, like, you know, but still I didn't know Syed that well at the time. So then after we've been down in Marsha for a few months, we are going to go link back up with 3-7 in Sangin. Well, Sangin is known as like the killing fields. So we go to Sangin and the rest of our interpreters quit. So I'm kind of like feeling Syed out, you know, and Syed is like, do you remember what I said to you? And I was like, no. And he's like, I told you that I won't leave you. I'll stay with you. So when all the others quit, he was loyal. Marsha was dangerous and you know, scary. Sangin was on a whole different playing field. And so if somebody's going to be that loyal to you when everybody else leaves you, it's kind of like the least that you can do.
Did he remain an interpreter until 2022?
2021. He had been an interpreter, I think, up until about 2018, 2019. I'd have to go and look. But I mean, like, he'd done it for like, I think like 8 to 10 years, you know, like you didn't always get that with your interpreters, you know?
I had a couple young interpreters and they were like that. They were just, they're about the same age group as the rest of my platoon, you know, the squad leaders and below. And they just loved being with us, man. They had no fear. It was fantastic. I love those two guys. So that deployment was 2010, right? So how did you stay in touch with him up until 2021 when you helped get him out of Afghanistan?
Well, we mainly stayed in touch through like Facebook, social media. When it came time to get him out, we were all using Signal because you can have your messages deleted. And it's good because if you're walking and the Taliban gets a hold of your phone and you've set your messages to delete after 60 seconds, they're not going to see you really talking to an American.
I read that picture book that Nicole had made, and yeah, dude, almost brought me to tears, man. It's cool to see that when he got to America and his family got to America, they're like, we're Americans now, and we love it, and they just totally embrace the American way.
You know, you sit there, and I see a video that he posted of his kids in like a school play. And you sit there and think that, man, 3 years ago, how different their life was. So I don't have a problem with helping people, and I don't have a problem with immigration. I don't like the invasion that's happening on our southern border right now. But, you know, he did more for America than a lot of Americans, and he put his life on the line a lot more than most of our citizens here. So, look, I'll take 100 Syeds over 100 of those little shits that you see protesting every time, you know, they get their panties in a wad.
I agree, man. You mentioned that you might struggle with post-traumatic stress. Do you ever recognize it, or have you worked through all of it?
I think that I am very good at compartmentalizing things. I never really lived on base. And my wife, because she always stayed in D.C., she was never really a part of my Marine Corps life. I think one of the things that guys suffer with, yes, they have PTSD. But I think that what happens, too, is that a lot of guys, what they're really suffering from is a feeling of irrelevance. It's almost like they peaked when they were 18, 19 years old in Iraq and Afghanistan. Their friends and family were supporting them. Man, you're a hero. You're so brave. Oh, what you did was incredible, yada, yada, yada. And then you come back and you're a plumber, you know? And no one's really singing your praises anymore.
Like, what's the purpose of my life anymore?
You're right. You get up and go to a job. But, you know, there's beauty in being a plumber. There's beauty in simplicity. And I was talking to my son the other day because he said, well, Dad, what was your favorite age? And I said, buddy, like, there's good things at every age. I said, part of being happy is realizing that at every step of the way, there's going to be good parts about your life. It's kind of just finding the best in every stage in life.
But you can't find joy or happiness if you're always living at a different time, yesterday or tomorrow. It's got to be living today, you know?
You know, I think that's what a lot of guys struggle with. I think some are really struggling with, they don't have the thing that kind of defined them and what they would look back on as one of the better times of their lives. There's hardships in life, regardless if you were in the Marine Corps or not. And, you know, sometimes people sit there and say, man, it'd be just great if I didn't have this stress anymore. And there's a way to make that go away. But I think one thing that people also need to remember is that if you do something to yourself, your wife, your parents, your siblings, your kids are always going to be like wondering why. And I guarantee you, regardless of what happens or what you think that you did or what you didn't do or what you failed, they would sit there and say, I don't care about any of that. I'd rather you be here. Everybody struggles. In America right now, it's not just veterans. Like, America just has a mental health crisis. And I think a lot of it has to do with, we have a society where, one, everybody's chasing happiness, but the things that they think will make them happy are actually not going to make them happy.
Happiness is a very temporary thing. Even when something does make you happy, it's always temporary because that thing doesn't bring lasting joy or purpose. People are always trying to chase happiness, but it's something that you can't actually keep or hold on to. It's always escaping you. So I think that's the wrong focus. Well, hey, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on and being my guest, and thanks for sharing everything. And is there any last stories you can think of or like to share? Or,
you know, my biggest fear in Afghanistan was not dying. My biggest fear, because my wife and I, like a Lance Corporal, I got married 6 days before I deployed, you know. So my biggest fear was like, you just got married. Like, what if something happens where, like, your wife has to take care of you for the rest of your life? Or what something happens that, like, blows off or damages your manhood, if you catch my drift? So, and then, like, your wife, like, sits, has married you for 6 days and doesn't have that for the rest of her life. So that always, like, was my big, like, I know it's stupid, but as like my biggest fear, like, oh, you know, I still want my balls blown off. You know? Like, so we were one time moving, and we were crossing this canal, and there was this little two sticks put together footbridge, right? And so we're crossing it, and I wanted everybody across before I went, right? So I'm getting everybody, let's make sure we get the whole group over there. Because I'm the platoon commander, like, I'm carrying I'm clearing like radios and batteries and all kinds of other stuff. So like I'm carrying probably more weight than most. And so I had to sit down on these two sticks and kind of like get myself across, you know, with them like between my legs. So I finally get to the other side. My guys help pull me up the bank. But like I'm clinging to the side of this canal like a frog, you know, like it's clinging to a tree and trying to pull myself up. So I'm sitting there as I'm like, you know, dry humping the side of this canal, trying to get out of it to finally get my guys to help pull me up. So we get about 20 feet from this canal. Boom. The wall of the canal. It put fucking IED. And it was in the embankment that I was just had my whole body up against.
How did it go off?
It was a command deck. So it didn't go off when it was supposed to. Thank God. You know, but so my guys like looked at me and I like looked and grabbed my balls. I was like, hell yeah. Avoided that one, you know.
You were dry humping the IED and it didn't go off.
Hey, you know what? God knew that my wife needed a complete husband to come, you know. So, you know, some of the humor and stuff. There was a day we had like a mass casualty.
It was IED.
It was not my platoon. It was another platoon. It killed two Afghan National Army soldiers, wounded like three or four of our dudes. My guys were out there in support of, and as they're bringing this A&A, Afghan National Army dude, who's missing both his legs, he's bled out, he's dead, right? This dude was hung like a damn donkey.
The dead dude?
Yeah, the dead dude. Like, you just see, like, you can see his shit, like, and so I'm sitting there, you know, like, I'm sitting there, like, smoking a cigarette, like, I'm just, you know, trying to, and, of course, one of my Marines looks at me and he was like, damn, sir, did you see the dick on that boy? And I was like, yes, I did. Like, he's like, man, some woman's really going to be sad. So I just stop. Nasty bastard. You know, like, some of the stuff that they would joke about and laugh about. I mean, I could go on for hours about like just some of the things they do and say, but it was great. So
people ask me if I miss the Marines, and I say, I don't miss the Marine Corps one bit. I said, but I miss more than anything. I miss being with Marines, Lance Corporals and Corporals, man. They speak their mind. They're completely untactful, and they're just amazing to be around, you know?
They are. You know, you saw a shift, I think. You started to kind of lose some of that. Look, I got it, but there's value in having just men. You can sit there and say, oh, that's sexist, yada, yada, yada. There is value in just having dudes around. There is. And no one's ever going to be able to convince me otherwise. You will never find anyone who's more pro-woman than this guy, but there was beauty in just having the boys.
I agree. I grew up with all sisters, and I have all daughters, and so the only time, it was the only 8 years of my life that I was really surrounded by dudes, and it was a lot of fun. Do you have one more story about the Marines that, I mean, something they said or did that was just hilarious?
Yeah, so my platoon sergeant in Afghanistan, for some reason, like, was determined to get a picture of everyone taking a shit. Like, why? Why didn't he want to get
so individually? He wanted a wall of every one of his members
individually.
Okay.
What's funny about the Marine Corps too is that like you've got all these guys and gal, all these guys from like all over, right? And they come from different walks of life, and come from different, you know, backgrounds. You got the Puerto Rican, you got the kid from Iowa, you got the kid from California, the kid that was who's, you know, families from El Salvador. You know, you've got a smattering. And it's just like everybody gets along. And they will sit there and say, you know, and they'll even say like what people now would call like racist shit to each other. But they just do it like in a joking fashion. And no one gets offended. I always had cash with me when I would deploy in case you got into a pickle and you needed to buy your life. So I would always like try to carry like $500,000. So I bought the platoon some chickens and some rice and some bread and some watermelon. So I divided the platoon into five squads, and I made our platoon guide a squad leader. Well, he was a black guy, right? So my platoon sergeant was Puerto Rican, half Mexican. And so Sergeant Boone, his little squad is out guarding the thing. So he comes back the following morning, they had rotated, right? And he's like, man, what did y'all eat last night? It looks like y'all ate like kings. And my platoon sergeant, without missing the beat, he was like, yeah, we waited until your black ass left to eat, to get chicken and watermelon so we would actually get a chance to eat it. And he like slaps me and he's like, right, sir? And I was like, I'm the officer. I'm not saying it. Like, you know, like, but I mean, it was shit like that. If he would look at me, sometimes I would do or say something and he would look at me and he'd be like, fucking white people. He was like, yeah, I don't get you. And I'm just like, okay. But yeah, like it was all in good fun. No one would get offended, you know?
Was there more to the story that with the platoon sergeant taking pictures?
No, it was like, I'm going to get people when they're at their worst.
Did he get everybody?
Yeah, he got me. I was, he got me. I got sick. And I legitimately had to go and was standing on the end of a mine roller that was attached to an MRAP. You know, I don't want to walk out on the ground. It may explode. So, like, I go and I'm, like, on the mine roller. And I see, like, his vehicle is, like, two behind mine.
Was this on patrol?
Yeah, well, we were driving somewhere. And so, like, we weren't on patrol. We were just driving somewhere. So he's like, gets out of his vehicle and it's like walking through a potential minefield just to get a picture of me taking a shit, like off the front of my mine roller. And I'm sitting there like hanging on this thing and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you know, and he's like, I told you I'd get you. Like, sick bastard. Like,
no way.
I saw a guy one time at nighttime stick a chem light in his ass. And run through the, like, where the officers and staff NCOs were hanging out at the range. So it's nighttime, and all of a sudden, you just see this dude streaking through, like, where all the leadership is, and the only thing he's got is a chem light sticking out of his asshole. Like, who comes this, up with this?
Where was this at?
This was at range 400 when I was enlisted.
Did they ever catch who that was, or...
Oh, they knew who it was. He had a very distinct voice. He knew who it was. He was a corporal. Hell, he's a police officer.
He was a corporal, and he ran through where all the officers and staff and COs were with a chem. Did they do anything to him?
No, they thought it was hilarious.
Oh, gosh, dude. Well, thanks so much, Chris, for sharing. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends and family so that we can bring more joy and awareness to those struggling with suicide ideation and the families who desperately need help after the loss of someone they love to suicide.